Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. We want to hear from you. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. We'll be sure to read some of them on air between now and the end of the program. Don't you worry about that. You can also reach us via text message. Send your texts to 129090, standard message. Rates do apply on our website. It's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's all available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN.ca, you know him for his wonderful analysis and his analytical writing. We're pleased to be joined by Travis Yost. Travis, good morning. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy Saturday, guys.
Happy Saturday to you as well, Travis. Obviously brought you on to talk a little bit about the Jets, to look around the NHL as we've sort of come to the end of the really busy season when it comes to free agency and when it comes to trades and, you know, the NHL draft and everything along those lines. So let me ask you this, you know, from an outsider's perspective, not somebody who's in Winnipeg, who's studying the Jets on a night-in, night-out basis like we are here, what are your thoughts about the moves that the Winnipeg Jets have made thus far this offseason?
I think they've done a above-average job. The reason why I say that is I think the Jets, they weren't going to solve the core issues of this roster in an offseason. Unfortunately, I mean, you have multiple needs on the blue line. You weren't as deep as you were probably 2-3 years ago in the forward pool, especially down the middle. You have the league's best goaltender, which is a huge bonus. But you've also got to do this and remain cap compliant, and you don't want to churn out a lot of cash in probably the worst economic offseason this league will ever have. So what is true for Winnipeg is true for most teams in the league, which is not a lot of owners looking to spend a ton of cash. And even the players, we obviously saw a pretty significant trend of players taking really sizable pay cuts on, you know, short-term 1-year, 2-year deals around the league, just because of how unstable things are right now. The reason why I think the Winnipeg did an overall good job, though, is that they finally addressed, or I should say readdressed in this case, one of the big holes down the middle of the lineup, and that was by way of not through free agency, but by acquiring Paul Stastny from Vegas. I thought, you know, the Cody Eakin experiments and a couple of other players that Winnipeg has tried further down the lineup did not work out, period. And Stastny has already been there. He's a really good fit. He's kind of in a weird career trajectory where he's starting to feel like a slightly earlier stage Joe Thornton, because he does so many things well, but he really seems to have a reticence of shooting the puck. And that might be something that continues in Winnipeg. And it's going to come down a lot to, you know, who his wingers are, who his line mates are. But overall, Paul Stastny is still a really solid two-way player. And anytime you can add him, a player of his skill set, for a very fair cost, in terms of what they had to give up in terms of picks to Vegas, I think it's hard to not like that move. The key is how are you going to support, how are you going to complement Stastny in the lineup, and how do you really create, you know, a couple of really threatening lines away from the Mark Scheifele line?
Travis, last segment we gave our power rankings of the seven Canadian teams with all of the discussion about, you know, a potential all-Canadian division for the 2021 season. When you look at all of the moves that were made by the Canadian teams, and, you know, that includes, you know, the Ottawa Senators, who most people are going to rank seven out of the seven Canadian teams. But, you know, has anything that's happened in the offseason changed your view of those Canadian teams? Because, you know, Drew has Montreal ranked number one, with obviously, you know, a lot of that having to do with, you know, Tyler Toffoli and Josh Anderson coming into the equation. But is Toronto still the top team, or, you know, are a lot of these teams interchangeable and there's no clear-cut number one for you?
Oh, I would actually say teams one through five are pretty darn interchangeable. And I would probably go as far as six. I did not think Calgary had a good offseason. That is another flawed roster, a decent team. They'll compete for a playoff berth for sure. But you have to compare them on a relative scale, and it's easier to like what a team like Edmonton did, for example, in their division, irrespective of what happens. And by the way, I don't see any way we don't have an all-Canadian division next year. I mean, we're kind of tap dancing around it, but it seems inevitable, which I think is going to be really exciting here, because you have six competitive teams. And then Ottawa, who is going to be terrible again. But I at the top, I really, really like what Montreal did. I think people are being a little bit unfair to Toronto. I mean, that is still the most talented roster. And for as much as, you know, people around the league like picking the Toronto, and by the way, they have their own issues, right? I mean, we just went through another year of them struggling to keep pucks out of their net, another year where they didn't make any headway in the playoffs. But, you know, you look at this lineup top to bottom, and you look what they do over the course of multiple seasons. I mean, they are regularly outscoring teams over an 82-game basis. I mean, it's not particularly close. So it's hard to not put Toronto at the top, but you really have to like what Montreal did. And honestly, Edmonton is going to be in that mix, too. The one question with Edmonton, of course, is they made a really, really big bet that the goaltending tandem of Koskinen and Smith will hold up next year. And we saw the wheels coming off that towards the end of last season. They were a disaster, Smith in particular, in the Chicago series. And, like, I get it. Like, a lot of the goalies came out of the free agency pool, and just like we talked about with Winnipeg, Edmonton had multiple needs to address. They decided to spend that money on depth skaters, which I don't think was necessarily a bad bet, right? Getting guys like Kyle Turris, Tyler Ennis back. You know, they'll get Kyler Yamamoto back, who I think played only 26 games last year. Like, they are going to be a deeper team, Edmonton, and I think that's a big push for them. But you can't have any confidence in their goaltending right now. So it seems like every one of these Canadian teams, save Ottawa, will compete for a playoff spot. But I think it's very fair to say each one of those teams has a fatal flaw that really prohibits them from being a cup contender next year.
Now, Travis, we obviously know with the cap limitations, you know, the UFA market is starting to cool down a little bit, but you still got guys like Mike Hoffman, Anthony Duclair, guys who had 29 goals, 23 goals, respectively, last season. Which name out there do you think is the one that's going to get snapped up, and which team do you think really those guys kind of fit with next in this as the UFA market continues to condense?
Yeah, these two are really interesting cases, right? I mean, Anthony Duclair, speed guy, good goal scorer, not a great defensive off-puck player, but had a really strong season in Ottawa. I think he was one of the any number of casualties from the cap uncertainty, and I don't rule out him possibly even returning to Ottawa at this point. Both of these guys are going to get short-term deals. Mike Hoffman's another interesting case. Like, here's a player who all he's done basically every year is score 25 or 30 goals. And he has a very, like, Thomas Vanek type feeling to him, right? Like, you don't like him, again, very similar to Duclair. Not a good defensive forward at all. He's not going to be any silky races anytime soon. But he is a phenomenal shooter of the puck and in a really, really good weapon for basically any first power play unit in the league. It's going to be hard. Now, Hoffman, of course, has a little bit of a different history off the ice, and you always wonder how much that creeps into certain locker rooms and organizational decisions. But both of these guys are going to get signed. What I think is going to be most fascinating is where their price tag comes in at, because we have seen weird contracts for decades in the NHL. But we really have never seen a situation where guys who you know, especially in the case of Hoffman, are mortal locks to score 25 goals in a season. And, you know, we're sitting here weeks removed from the opening of free agency, and you're like, what type of deal can Hoffman get? Maybe 2 years of security? And that to me is, I mean, it's just as much an indictment or just as much a comment of kind of the cap uncertainty and the economic issues challenging the league right now, as it is for teams who are also weighing a number of things, expansion rules. I mean, you're already seeing Canadian teams in particular making moves. The Chris Russell, you know, extension in Edmonton was a great indicator that, you know, teams have long began planning already for the Seattle expansion. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they come in because, again, these are guys who are normally swept up on day one or day two. They're probably asking for multi-year deals because in any other normal year they would have gotten it. I just don't know that it's going to materialize this offseason. And again, the other thing about Hoffman, not the youngest player in the league anymore. People, you know, I know he's only been around the NHL for, you know, I want to say five or six or so seasons, but he came into the league very late out of Ottawa's AHL Binghamton program. I want to say he was about 25 or 26 before he made the jump. So there's a lot of miles on that body. He's not as young of a face, and you also wonder if that's playing against him.
Last question for you, Travis. Travis Yost of TSN.ca is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. The Vegas Golden Knights got the big fish in the free agency market, you know, acquiring Alex Pietrangelo, you know, ex of the St. Louis Blues. But to do so, they had to send Paul Stastny here to Winnipeg, and they had to send Nate Schmidt over to Vancouver. How much better does Alex Pietrangelo make the Golden Knights, if at all, in your opinion? And what does that do for the ceiling of the Golden Knights, especially when you look at their, what I'll describe their lack of depth down the middle?
Yeah, it's Vegas is maybe the most interesting organization in the league because they have shown that they are not only willing to spend a fortune, and sometimes, and we have any number of cases where that those have been bad decisions, but they are smart enough to get off players before they become, let's say, before their value goes through the floor. You know, we saw that a great example of the Thomas Tatar trade. They never fit him in 2 years ago with you know from Detroit. And they couldn't make it work. They didn't want to waste any time on it. They moved it to Montreal. Max Pacioretty has been a great player. Montreal picked up not only Tatar, who's been good there, but Nick Suzuki. But they have shown that they are willing to pretty much do anything, and they're not going to wait. I think they've also shown, and I would put this as a debit, not a credit on them, loyalty only goes so far for them. I mean, we saw what happened to Marc-Andre Fleury. It seems like he's going to stay, again, because of cap reasons. But I bring this up because Nate Schmidt in particular, I thought was bad in the playoffs, almost the entire playoffs. And that was a bit of an extension off of his regular season. And part of me wonders here if Vegas clearly loved adding a talented two-way player like Pietrangelo to their first pairing. I mean, you make that move anytime you can. I also think they're betting that Nate Schmidt is not the same player he once was. I don't know if they're going to be right, but they just had about 20 or 25 games of review of him in the postseason. And, you know, in all fairness to Nate Schmidt, like, it's not easy to come out of a multi-month lockdown. You get a week of camp, and then you're expected to anchor a blue line for 21, 22, 23 minutes. But he was a turnover machine in the playoffs, and I think Vegas had to look for a player that had value around the league and could still play and could still attract something and was meaningful enough on the cap standpoint that they could get off his contract to bring in Pietrangelo's salary. So I think Nate Schmidt's going to add value in Vancouver, but I think Vegas is betting that he is not the same player he was even a few years ago. And I think that's actually one of the most fascinating things to watch this year because I think Vegas made a big bet, and I think the easy win will be adding a player like Pietrangelo to the lineup, but that's going to be seamless. I think the more interesting thing is, did they lose a lot of value, and was it negligible, to your point, because they had to trade Schmidt, or was Schmidt starting to regress as a player, and this they pinned this almost perfectly from a timing standpoint?
Very interesting. Travis Yost covers the NHL for TSN.ca. Travis, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, take care, guys, anytime.
Take care, Travis. When we come back, we play The Price is Right. We look at some of the remaining UFAs, and we determine where they're going to end up and for what price they're going to be. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back. Time for a little edition of Price is Right, where we look at some of our unrestricted free agents in the NHL, decide where they're going to go, which team, and how much money they're going to be. We can also call this the Bodog.net scoreboard, where we look at the scoreboard of unrestricted free agents. Let's start with the guy that we talked about with Travis Yost off the previous segment. That's Mike Hoffman, ex of the Florida Panthers, coming off a year where he had 29 goals, 59 points. He's 30 years of age. He made $5.19 million last season. Give me a value and a destination for Mike Hoffman, Mr. Ginsburg.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a couple of weeks ago, I would probably say, you know, Mike Hoffman's going to get 4 years or 5 years, guys, but the way it's looking, you know, it might be a shorter-term deal. I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the Boston Bruins, so I think the Bruins are a team that could be in on Hoffman. Columbus Blue Jackets, Nashville. I'm really not sure which one of those teams has the upper hand, but I'm going to say 2 years, $9 million total.
So four and a half million
for Mike Hoffman. I think he probably wants, you know, $5 million plus a year, but I don't think he's going to get it.
So you're thinking that he's going to get it's a pay cut for Mike Hoffman in your books. Dave, what about that?
Well, I think if Mike Hoffman's taking a pay cut, then he's probably only doing it on a one-year deal. I think he would just try and ride out this current situation and then, you know, bet on himself to repeat, as Travis Yost just said. He seems like a guy who's consistently going to get you 25, 30 goals. I like Nashville. You know, they've got the cap room right now. I think they've got about $13 million in available cap space right now.
And that's a team that needs something. They've had a very poor offseason, in my opinion.
So to me, Nashville makes a lot of sense for a player like Hoffman. I would see him doing like a one-year, $6 million deal. I don't know that he's necessarily looking to take a pay cut. And if he does, he shaves it down to a five and a half. But, again, I think that's only in a one-year term because, to me, you do what Taylor Hall has done in Buffalo. You bet on yourself. You say, listen, I'm going to take a shorter-term deal. Now, Taylor Hall's put himself into a good situation, of course, because he knows he's going to get points.
And he gets to play with Jack Eichel.
Which means he's going to get paid the following subsequent year. So that's a smart bet. Is that same situation in Nashville, you know, a guarantee? Well, I don't know. Maybe if Matt Shane has a bit of a rebound, you have an opportunity to get put up some points in Nashville. So I like Nashville as a good spot for Hoffman.
Let's move to Anthony Duclair, ex of the Ottawa Senators. He was coming off a contract where he got paid $1.65 million. They weren't able to come to terms on a qualifying offer, so he became an unrestricted free agent. He had 40 points last year, 23 goals in 66 games played. The price is right for Anthony Duclair. At what price and at what destination, Mr. Ginsburg?
Yeah, and, you know, that was actually his second career 20-goal season. Obviously, you know, Duclair got a lot of playing time with the Ottawa Senators, but he's not necessarily a guy that you expect to score 20 goals. But he's also only 25 years old, which I think a lot of people think he might be a little bit older. But, you know, I'm thinking Duclair is going to get a short-term deal as well. And, you know, Dave had Hoffman at 1 year. I had Hoffman at 2 years. And I think because Duclair's a little bit younger, you know, I don't think he's going to get, you know, more than a couple of years, but I think he'll probably get 1 or 2 years. And, you know, I'm thinking Duclair right around maybe $3 million a year seems about right, maybe a little bit less, maybe around $2.5 million. I think he could be a nice player for the Devils just because you have a lot of youth up in that forward group. And I think a guy like Duclair could probably fit in nicely, probably on your third line, you know, maybe your second line. On the wing, so I'm going to say 2 years, $3 million per.
Dave?
It's an interesting situation. I mean, he's 25 years old, as you just pointed out. He's played on, I think, five teams already. He's either played on five, he's played for Arizona, the Rangers, Chicago's three, Columbus four, Ottawa's five.
So
this is going to be a sixth team, provided, as Travis Yost thought, he may sign back with Ottawa. But if he doesn't, he'll be looking at signing with his sixth team. To me, I like a team like the Kings. I think about $13 million in space. Now, again, with Duclair, you got to be a little bit careful, right? Because was that an anomaly? You know, that 23 goals is a big jump from, what did he have before last year? He had...
looks like 8, maybe?
Well, he had 19.
19, okay.
So, I mean, it wasn't a big jump, but the point is that, you know, he increased it. But again, you got to be a little bit careful. You got to be, you know, when he's jumped from that many teams. So do you want to commit to him long term? His one other decision that he made that's curious is that he got rid of his agent. So he's doing all the negotiations himself.
Saves some money at the very least.
Well, he does save money, but again, there's a risk. Now, obviously, any contract he does is going to have to be overseen by a lawyer, but at the same time, he's not having that representation. So to me, I would see a team saying, listen, we'll take a two-year, because again, there's this cost uncertainty. So, you know, a two-year deal, you know, probably around $3.5-4 million would be my guess is what a team is willing to spend. Because again, if he can hit again and if he continues, it's only to, again, 25 years old, you got a guy who potentially could hit 25-30 goals next season. You know, maybe that's worth a $4 million risk.
One last player, Mikael Granlund. You know, we know him here in the Central Division as he was with the Minnesota Wild. Then he went to Nashville, and things didn't work out very well in Nashville. Coming off a year with 17 goals, 30 points, and 63 games played, made $5.75 million last year. So I think it's pretty clear that he's going to have to take a pay cut. The price is right for Mikael Granlund. At what price, Mr. Ginsburg?
Yeah, Mikael Granlund, you know, in any other year, you would be like, how is this guy not being signed already, right? But in this type of environment, like we just talked about with a guy like Mike Hoffman, when you're kind of known as more of an offensive-minded player, a guy like Granlund remains unsigned. Eric Halla, I know this isn't the player we're doing right now. Halla's another guy that has to be signed, right? Like, this is an NHL player. And I realize, you know, he didn't have the best offensive year either. But, you know, Granlund, I have absolutely no idea right off the bat. I don't know who he fits in with because, you know, is he a centerman? Is he a winger? Like, he's played both, right? But, you know, you have to think a guy like Granlund would be seeking a 3-4-5 year deal, but I just don't know if he's going to get it. I don't think he's going to get a 1 year deal. I'm going to say 3 years. A guy like Granlund, you know, could easily give you 45 to 50 points. So I'm going to say 3 years, $4.5 million per.
Really? Still that's a high price tag, I think. And where?
I have no idea.
Okay. So
I mean, I honestly, it's tough to find a fit right now, right? Because, you know, you know, Dave mentioned the LA Kings. They've got cap space. You know, maybe a team like the Buffalo Sabres, who are looking for a little bit of forward depth. But again, you know, do you see him as a winger or a guy that can play center? You know, for me, he would obviously be a winger on the Sabres with Eichel and Staal there as your top two centers. So, you know, maybe a team like that, maybe a team that's looking for some offense like the Columbus Blue Jackets, maybe they're going to be in on Granlund. It's tough to say, but, you know, I do expect him to sign at some point, but he might have to take a pay cut.
This version of The Price is Right was not a Mark Goodson television production. Mark Goodson, fun fact, a cousin of my grandfather.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, it was brought to you, though, by Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play. When we come back, we're going to head out to New Jersey, be joined by Devils play-by-play broadcaster Matt Laughlin, talk about the Devils, and talk about the career, just retired earlier this week, of the legendary Doc Emrick. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number 3 up next on your on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsburg and Dave Manuk. We want to hear from you. You can send us your comments via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also reach us via text message if you prefer that form of technology. You can do that by sending your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend, New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster, Matt Laughlin. Matt, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Drew, Ezra, and Dave, thank you very much for asking me to come on. Always a pleasure to speak with the boys on the Legal Curve.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that, and we always appreciate you you giving us your time. You know, we want to talk about the New Jersey Devils and their offseason, but we first want to talk about your colleague in the tri-state area, Doc Emrick, who announced his retirement from lead voice of the NHL in the United States. You know, his career has been just a fantastic one. So, you know, somebody who's close to Matt, who works in a similar market to Matt, and, you know, obviously knows him better than we do. Pardon me, knows Doc better than we do. We wanted to ask you about, you know, maybe your experience with Doc Emrick and maybe a memory or two that you can share with our audience that they wouldn't necessarily get from simply watching him or listening to him on air.
Well, sure. And, you know, and the tributes do speak volumes about what he has meant and will mean to hockey in the United States. And I had the pleasure of working with him for 10 years on the Devils broadcast, and then we overlapped when I moved over to radio. He was still doing the Devils, and obviously the last decade or so he's been national exclusively. And just an incredible, passionate voice for the game. The ability for me to watch him work, and he had a work ethic that's second to none, and all the great ones do, of course, but to see how much he loved the game, not just preparation. You know, any of us can mark a chart and know who the leading scorers are and even who the 10th leading scorer is on a team and dish out a draft position, et cetera. But, you know, Doc was always digging, always interested in stories. And that's the thing that I learned from him. The game is the thing. We understand that. People are tuning in to watch the game. But the game is not always a 2-1 nail-biter Stanley Cup game. It's, you know, it's a mid-season game that it's a 4-1 kind of a slog. And how are you going to keep people interested in watching or listening? And for that, there was nobody better than Doc. And that sounds odd because there was nobody better when it was a 2-1 Stanley Cup playoff game with everything on the line. But he had stories that kept you interested because he spoke to everybody at the rink. He had stories about security guards. He had stories about the assistant equipment managers and, of course, their bosses. Not just the players. Anyone involved in the game, Doc had a warm spot in his heart for. So to see that, that was great training for me because I realized we are really in the storytelling business.
And, you know, Matt, you mentioned the tributes at the beginning of your answer, and you know, there were definitely many, you know, tributes for Doc Emrick, and you know, he deserves those. He's one of the best play-by-play voices of all time, not just in hockey, but sports in general. And, you know, it wasn't just writers or broadcasters that were paying tribute. You had many former players, you know, both Devils and, you know, you had a lot of Washington Capitals. You know, Doc, of course, covered that Stanley Cup final in 2018, along with many other Stanley Cup finals, but, you know, you mentioned, you know, his preparation and his love and passion for hockey. And for you, is that the reason why he's inspired so many people, not just because of how good he was at his craft and, you know, his vocabulary, which is, you know, just incredible. You know, waffle board stands out to me as far as one of my favorite, you know, Doc Emrickisms. But is that for you just, you know, the quality of person that he was and his ability basically to, you know, transcend the game of hockey?
No doubt in my mind. Now, look, his mastery of the vocabulary is nonpareil, and I don't try, even in the slightest, to mimic him. And I honestly think anyone who does is making a mistake because he's the best. I understand that flattery imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but I think there's only one Doc Emrick who can turn those phrases so rapidly and not use the same terms over and over again, although many of them have become burned in our minds because of how long he's been on the scene. So that, I think, should just stand alone as a Doc Emrick thing. However, his humanity, I know we say this about many people, but there is not a better person around hockey. There are others who are as good, but he is a genuinely good man who cares about you. You know, when we would have a conversation, and, you know, they had diminished over time, and we stayed in contact. We didn't see him at Devils games as much because the Devils had fallen off the table a bit, and there wasn't too much national prominence attached to our games, and so he wasn't necessarily on the scene. But, you know, we would stay in contact with texts and Christmas cards, et cetera. But it was never like, how are the Devils going? Or it was always like, how are your children? How's Maggie? Tell me about Liam, the youngest, and I'll tell you a funny story about him, which is why you always reference Liam. But that's the kind of guy he is, and he has an incredible memory. And you know, I know that I try to remember a lot of people's names, but there are times when I go, okay, I got the name, but now your wife's name again, or your kid's name, you know, help me out. And Doc never draws a blank. So his care for people in general, but people involved in the game, is just so deep and such a great thing to see. I mean, he's really a deeply religious man, and it shows. It just shows in the way he cares for people.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is New Jersey Devils broadcaster Matt Laughlin, talking about the Devils, also paying tribute to Doc Emrick, who announced his retirement earlier this week.
Well, Matt, I get the chance to ask you about the Devils now because, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Devils, one of the youngest teams in the NHL, signed a two-time Stanley Cup champion to be the goaltender next season in Corey Crawford. So what kind of, you know, the experience, what will he, the 10-year veteran, mean for this New Jersey Devils team?
Oh, I think it has the chance to be an incredibly big signing. Now, the Devils as an organization, Tom Fitzgerald as the general manager, are taking great pains to make sure that no one gets overly excited about what is happening with the Devils. Excited, yes. But Tom has made it clear, look, we're making moves. We're not ready to compete for a Stanley Cup championship, so we're not going to be a player for a major free agent. We're going to make smart moves, and we're going to develop, and we will be good when Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier are starting to hit their prime, and then through those years when they're in their prime. And I think that's in a reaction to last year's summer of Shiro, where so much excitement was built around the team because of getting Jack Hughes in the draft, because of trading for Nikita Gusev, acquiring Kike Subban. There was the sense that the Devils were about to break through, and it all fell apart. You know, Taylor Hall was a part of the team, but it all fell apart. Bad start, and we know where it began. Opening night against the Winnipeg Jets, where the Devils couldn't hold the lead, and they just never got out of their own way. And ultimately, Hall's traded, John Hines is fired, Ray Shiro is fired, and the organization's taking great pains to say, we're making the right moves. That being said, they're shoring up an area that was in need of shoring up. Corey Schneider, as you guys know, and all the Winnipeg listeners know, what a great guy. I mean, you know, he played there. We know how much he cares. We know how much of a good guy he is, but and it may happen. He signed with the Islanders. We wish him the very best, but the Devils couldn't be confident going in with him being their 1B goalie to Mackenzie Blackwood. And Corey Crawford has Stanley Cups on his resume. He had a really good year. Yeah, he's 35, 36, and at some point Father Time grabs you by the ankles and drags you down, but that didn't appear to be the case this year. And I think they are in very good hands with him, not serving as a mentor, serving as a challenge to Mackenzie Blackwood to show that he can handle being the number one guy. And there'll be pressure on you to show that. And if not, they feel very good that Crawford will be able to do a lot of good things in goal. So that is one area they absolutely had to improve this offseason. And I think they did at a reasonable number and with a guy who's got a terrific history.
Matt Laughlin is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the New Jersey Devils. He's a play-by-play broadcaster for the team. Matt, it was back in July that Tom Fitzgerald and Lindy Ruff were hired as general manager and head coach, respectively. Why is this the right brain trust to lead the Devils back to a position of prominence in the NHL?
Well, I'll start with Fitzy. I mean, Ray did a terrific job with the Devils, and Tom is a protege of Ray. So in some cases, you would say, well, what's different? You know, you've got the son of, so to speak, doing a lot of the same things. I think Tom's communication skills are a little higher, better. I won't say higher, better. I would say that his inclusion philosophy is definitely better than Ray's. Ray tended to kind of operate on his own, ask for some opinions, but Tommy wants a lot of people at the table. He'll make the decision. He's made that clear, but he wants a lot of opinions. So that's a little different. I think it also gives the Devils a chance to take a breather, because Ray was building something here, and Tommy and the organization will benefit from some of the things that Ray did. He helped restock the minor league system, and that's starting to bubble with players, et cetera. But Tommy is the right guy to steer this ship. Very confident, has served in every role, basically 1,000 games as a player. He's been in player development. He's been an assistant general manager, and now he is the head guy. So he's got a lot of good ideas, and I think he's going to be terrific. And he understands exactly where the Devils are and has been able to articulate that at times. Ray certainly was on the same page as that, but I think that message wasn't as clear as Tom has made it. So I think he's good from that standpoint. And from a Lindy Ruff standpoint, look, they've got a guy who's top 10 all-time in wins in the National Hockey League. He has stayed in the game. He was an assistant with the Rangers. He has admitted that he learned a lot in that role in terms of how to communicate with the younger, modern player. Everybody wants to win, but we all know there's a different way that they have to be addressed. And so, you know, Lindy has learned that. We'll see him put those into play. We'll wait and see on the results. But I think that, you know, Lindy is a veteran guy who will command the room as soon as he walks in and has an idea of how he wants this team to play.
Matt, last question for you here, and I wanted to stick with coaching because just in the last 48 hours or so, the Devils hired Chris Taylor, who is a very well-respected head coach, was let go by the Buffalo Sabres organization. They also hired Dave Rogalski as their goaltending coach, but that was after bringing in Mark Recchi, who was unfortunately let go by the Pittsburgh Penguins organization. And, you know, most people, you know, are looking at these coaching hires and they're saying that the Devils are putting together, you know, a pretty formidable coaching staff. I guess, you know, what are your thoughts on some of the hires? Recchi, obviously a very smart hockey mind, and what could that mean about maybe, you know, how different the Devils look stylistically next year?
Yeah, well, as you know, you have to have the ingredients to make a good meal, and so the Devils are still compiling them. But I do think, and I want to be careful when I say this, because I respect anyone who gets to the National Hockey League in whatever way, shape, or fashion, because it's the best league in the world. And if you can play a game here or coach a game here, you've got an awful lot going for you. But I think the experience factor behind the bench is going to be huge. John Hines is going to be a very good coach. In many ways, he is, but this was his first job. Elaine Nazardine had not been in the National Hockey League, really as a player, cup of coffee, and not as a coach. They had other assistants who were neophytes relatively to the National Hockey League. Now they've got an experienced NHL coaching staff, guys who have been there, done that, starting with Lindy, adding Mark Recchi. Naz has stayed around. I mean, he showed himself to be really a good young coach. He did a lot to settle the ship down when there were the stormy seas. And then you bring in a Chris Taylor, who has had a taste of the NHL, has played overseas, and has been a head coach in the American Hockey League. So I think that they are better suited from an experience standpoint than they were previously. And that will help, because we all know that there will be some there will be some rough nights ahead. This is still a situation where they're building.
Matt Lachlan is the New Jersey Devils play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us from the tri-state area. Matt, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, and have a great rest of your weekend.
Guys, thanks very much for the invite. I know we don't have much time, but love to ask you, what do you think about, what can we expect from Dmitry Kulikov? Devils recently added him.
Not a lot. Have low expectations, and I say that as politely as possible. I mean, he's if he's anything other than you know, serious depth on the blue line, then you're probably asking too much of him.
Yeah, I think that's the role he'll serve. But if he can help get the puck out of the Devils' end, which was another key area they had to shore up, he'll help in that regard. That's for sure.
You know, the old saying, there's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. That one might put it to the test, but only at $1 million, a little more than $1 million. It shouldn't be that hold-your-nose-worthy.
Where do we sign up?
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
All right,
when
fellas,
we come back, we discuss...
Well.
Take care, Matt. When we come back, we discuss the Chicago Blackhawks publicly announcing they're going into a full-blown rebuild. What does that mean for their veteran core, guys who are used to winning? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Hawks just sent out a heads-up to their fans. Pain is coming. And they're telling their fans to get ready for a rebuild. After not re-signing Corey Crawford and trading away Brandon Saad, the Blackhawks tweeted out a message to their fans today saying, "Moving forward, we're committed to developing young players and rebuilding our roster. We want more than another window to win. We want to reach the summit again and to stay there." The note went on to caution, "Our young players are going to make mistakes. We'll miss the mark sometimes. So get ready, Hawks fans. This could hurt."
That's TSN Hockey Gino Retta talking about the note that Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks organization sent out, basically saying, hey, we're going to suck for the next couple of years, which is something you always want to hear from your organization. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Still going to join us on the program in about 5 minutes' time at the bottom of the hour, MJHL Manitoba Junior Hockey League Commissioner Kevin Sorette is going to join us, so stay tuned for a little more local content, a little more junior hockey talk here on the show. But this note from Stan Bowman, you know, it's peculiar to me, because had they signed Robin Lehner to a contract extension, like we all said they should have when they acquired him, you know, last year before trading him away to Vegas at the trade deadline. If they had acquired Robin Lehner and they acquired solid goaltending, I'm not sure that this rebuild would be totally necessary. That's what makes this so peculiar to me, and makes the decision making here by Stan Bowman and the brain trust of the Blackhawks so uncomfortable, maybe so peculiar. I just don't quite understand why it's necessary, especially because really the two big areas of concern for me for the Blackhawks were goaltending and defense, and I think they could have rectified both with a couple of tweaks here or there.
Yeah, but I agree with you on the goaltending. Like, you decided to trade Robin Lehner, but then you decided not to re-sign, but you thought that the reason why you didn't sign the reason why you didn't keep Robin Lehner was because you were going to keep Corey Crawford for another couple years. And what added to that was the fact that Corey Crawford was excellent in that series against the Hawks.
I mean,
the Oilers, and you couldn't replicate that against the Golden Knights.
Right.
Right? But Corey Crawford was the only reason why the Hawks beat the Oilers, let's be honest. And the Oilers are a more talented team, but yeah, I agree with you, Drew. I mean, you look at the defense, and, you know, it's like Duncan Keith and everybody else, right? And Brent Seabrook's contract is on the books. We don't know, you know, if he's going to go on LTIR. We don't know what his future is.
Yeah. He says he's going to come back and play, right. But, you know, he's certainly not going to be, he's not going to be value commensurate with the amount on his contract.
Yeah. He's a third pairing defenseman. I love Brent Seabrook, but he's just not that top four guy anymore. Or at the very least, he's not a very good, you know, top four defenseman. So, you know, you look at the defense and you need a lot of work there, but, you know, this is obviously negative for Blackhawks fans, not, you know, going to be a playoff team most likely. I mean, I would rank them either sixth or seventh in the Central Division.
They're a clear seventh to me. Well, they have the worst goaltending in the NHL as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's not a strength, that's for sure, Drew. But, you know, if you're Patrick Kane and you're Jonathan Toews, I think this is a good thing, isn't it? Like, you look at the New York Rangers and what's happened with them, right? Like, they were bad for a couple of years, and you know, what happened? Well, they drafted Kaapo Kakko second overall. Mm-hmm. They obviously won the draft lottery and got Alexis Lafreniere, mm-hmm. but, you know, you went
because Zibanejad continued to develop.
Sure. But, you know, you also acquired Jacob Trouba, right? Like, you signed Artemi Panarin. So now,
Adam,
you know,
Fox.
Well, yeah, I mean, Adam Fox
to a lesser degree.
Yeah. But no, Fox is a good defenseman. It's a good point. But, you know, they've brought in some really good players to complement, you know, the younger players that they've drafted. And you're right, Mika Zibanejad over the last couple of years has definitely taken a step forward. And obviously, you know, it doesn't help that, you know, Shesterkin, you know, has emerged immediately, you know, as a number one goaltender. And then they bought out Henrik Lundqvist. But, you know, you look at the Rangers, I think if you're Stan Bowman, and he is taking, you know, a page out of their playbook, make no mistake about that, with the, you know, the statement, mm-hmm. you know, basically telling Hawks fans, like, we're not going to be very good next year, and we might not be very good for a couple of years. Now, if you're a Blackhawks fan, you're thinking, well, I hope it's not 3 or 4 years, because Kane and Taves don't have 3 or 4 years. That's the thing. Like, if this is a quick rebuild, that's fine. And I think it could be, but you have to make the right moves, right? Because we talked about it last year. You know, obviously bringing in, you know, guys like Calvin DeHaan, Olli Maatta on the back end, that didn't work. And the Jalmerson trade that brought in Connor Murphy didn't work. So you have to address the defense at some point. And they've drafted some good players like Adam Boqvist, you know, who could be pretty good, but I don't think anybody's necessarily expecting him to be a number one defenseman.
Let
so
me
I
ask
think,
you this, though.
I think you can. All I wanted to say was I think you can turn this around quickly, because when you look at players like Dylan Strome and Alex DeBrincat and Kirby Dach, those types of players, Kubalik, I mean, they've got young players. This isn't like an aging team, you know, that there's no, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. I think they can turn it around, but, you know, that defense needs a lot of work.
Let me ask you this, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
Given all the moves he's made over the last number of years where they seem to be lurching in no discernible direction,
yep.
Why do you trust that Stan Bowman is the right guy to lead you through this rebuild?
Are you asking me if I do?
No. I'm saying if you're a Blackhawks fan, you know, why is he the right guy to lead this rebuild? Because to me, a lot of the questions I have with the Blackhawks
other by the moves he's made.
Are start with the general manager.
Well, I mean, again, I guess if the ownership continues to have faith that he can do what they want him to do, and if the plan is something that is something they've discussed and they've executed together, then you stick with the guy that you feel has given you the ability to do that. But, you know, and again, I think it's one thing we talked about, I think last week on the show, I said, you know, sometimes if you mortgage, you know, your future for the current, you have to deal with the ramifications of those actions. And we knew with Chicago, you know, 3 Stanley Cups, that's a pretty good thing to be able to have on the resume. Now people are lamenting these, you know, Seabrook and Keith and their some of these contracts, but at the end of the day, like, these are the guys who were the vehicles that got you those Stanley Cups. So again, like I said, you know, you can go back and it's easy to suggest that or lament the current state of the franchise, but again, you can't have, you're never going to have success forever. I mean, not many teams have 3 Stanley Cups on their resume in the current format of the NHL. So,
which is designed to not let you do that.
Right, exactly. So for the Blackhawks. Now again, are they going to be able to be the Rangers? I don't know, because the luck of the draw is probably not going to be on their side the way it was for the Rangers. But
2 years in a row.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, that ball was a little heavy.
That's true.
Hence the reason the guy dropped in a little early. But the fact of the matter is that I think Chicago is taking a risk. I think there's a gamble, but I think if you're in, you're in. And that's kind of what it looks like the ownership has decided.
And that's why I don't think you want to be a borderline playoff team and hopefully squeak in.
A tweener,
you know,
sure.
Exactly. So I think they're making the right decision here. But like I said, you know, it's one thing if it's a 1 or 2 year rebuild versus a 3 or 4 year rebuild. Because if that's the case, then obviously, you know, Blackhawks fans are in for a lot of misery.
When we come back, MJHL, Manitoba Junior Hockey League Commissioner Kevin Sorette is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the final hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk, we're all with you up until 12 noon. We want to hear from you at Illegal Curve on Twitter. You can also send us some text messages. Send us your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. On our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets. It's got the latest Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by the commissioner of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. His name is Kevin Sorette. Kevin, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Kevin, and we appreciate you giving us your time. Obviously, want to talk to you about the MJHL, and it's obviously been a very interesting start to the season, given the COVID-19 situation that we're all experiencing, that the entire world is experiencing. The MJHL is the first of the Junior A hockey leagues to actually take to the ice. Some of your colleagues in the rest of Western Canada are in the midst of the preseason. How much of a feather in the cap, how much pride do you take in the fact that you've been able to thus far get the season underway and thus far get it underway in a safe and responsible manner?
It's definitely very rewarding. You know,
we're all very fortunate to be in the position we're in and being able to move forward with our regular season. And I know that sentiment's echoed right through each organization, all the players, the staff, the communities, and all the spectators and fans of MJHL hockey. So, yeah, we're really excited. It's been very positive so far with our start to the season. You know, we're in the midst of our third week right now of regular season games. And like I said, at the end of the day, we're very fortunate to be in the position that we're in right now.
You know, Kevin, there's no shortage of talented players in the Manitoba Junior Hockey League, but, you know, with the Western Hockey League not starting until early January, you have a lot of top-end 16-year-old players, some of the best 16-year-olds in the province, like Connor Geeky and Tyson Zimmer scored his first MJHL goal yesterday for Weiwei Sekapo, Denton Matejczuk, another player playing for the Steinbach Pistons. I mean, just how amazing is that to have those quality prospects that, you know, even though they eventually will play in the Western Hockey League, are able to, you know, get some games in and, you know, help out some teams in the MJHL?
Yeah, it's pretty special. It's a pretty unique situation, you know, to have those young Western Hockey League and really NHL prospects playing in the league this season that, at a normal season, probably we wouldn't see those caliber of players, especially, you know, with them going the Western Hockey League route for sure. So, you know, it's bringing a lot of positive attention to our league. I know there's a high level of scout activity right now, obviously on those guys, which brings, you know, further exposure to all the players within our league. So it's been a real benefit. And for those players, it is exciting to see them playing hockey, and they're stepping right in, and they're very good players. And, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I don't know if those players, you know, would have played in our league. So it shows the, you know, the steps we've taken and where we are as a league to have quality of players like that excited to play in the MJHL. So it is very special in a very unique season.
You know, Kevin, nobody obviously anticipated COVID happening, but, you know, one of the things that you guys had kind of happen this year is the introduction of a new team, the Winnipeg Freeze. So what does that new team meant to you? Now have 12 teams in the league, but what has it meant for the MJHL?
It was a unique situation, you know, to bring a new franchise into the MJHL, which hasn't happened in a very long time during, you know, the situation we're in with in regards to COVID-19, but it's been positive. It's obviously a group that our board of governors are comfortable with as they also own the Winnipeg Blues in the MJHL, and they have a very strong ownership and management group, you know, that fits in nicely with an already strong group throughout our league for team ownerships and their board of governors. So, you know, it's positive. It allowed us to move to a 12-team schedule and go to a divisional format, which we felt was absolutely necessary for this season, you know, to reduce travel and reduce the risk of spread between and potential exposure between multiple teams, which would have been the case potentially with the way we've done schedules in seasons past. And it also provides, you know, 25 more opportunities for MJHL players to play elite junior A hockey within the province of Manitoba. So, again, a very unique situation, but it's been positive, and we're happy to have the Winnipeg Freeze as a new franchise in the MJHL.
Kevin Surrett is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kevin is the commissioner of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. And Kevin, they say, you know, from the frying pan into the fire, you spent, you know, a number of years as the director of operations under Kim Davis's leadership when he was commissioner. He, of course, retired at the end of this past season, you know, spent 18 years as commissioner of the league. What did you learn from Kim Davis, you know, in his role as commissioner, and how do you want to sort of continue and build upon his legacy?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, it was special to be able to work closely with Kim over the four seasons as director of operations, and really, you know, we had a strong partnership. It was very much, you know, working on everything together, and I'm very thankful for, you know, his leadership and the opportunity he gave me to really take the lead on a lot of different areas of my role as director of operations. It was a new role when I started it, and he really allowed me to make it my own to really, you know, move forward with it in a lot of different ways. For him, it was just really special for me to see how he handled situations, to see how he dealt with, you know, coaching staffs and board of governors and the CJHL and Hockey Canada. So that was invaluable for me. And, you know, all things considered, the transition period has been over the last two seasons, really. And from that sense, from moving director of operation to league commissioner on July 1st was very smooth. The transition was smooth. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic was a whole different side of things that really no one has a roadmap for. So that's definitely been interesting, and it's been a long, trying summer. But again, I can't commend our teams enough and the facilities for really, you know, following through and making the commitment to everything that's required with safety precautions and to the players. You know, everyone understands the situation we're in, and everyone understands how fortunate we are, and we're going to do everything we can to play hockey in a safe environment.
You know, Kevin, when it came out that the MJHL and Farmery Brewery had partnered together, I figured because maybe, you know, we work in the same building, you would be able to, you know, hook me up. No, I'm just kidding, of course. But the MJHL and Farmery Brewery have a light pack that just came out earlier this week. And we should mention $2 from every limited edition 12-pack sold goes back to the MJHL Farmery Brewery Scholarship Award, which is just awesome. But I also wanted to ask you about the partnership that the MJHL recently announced with the Pan Am Concussion Program, and how important was that for you and the MJHL to be able to offer, you know, the additional concussion support for your players?
Yeah, it's paramount. Really, it was a no-brainer. You know, Pan Am approached us and. You know, obviously from our level as the league office, player safety is our number one priority. And anywhere we can add to that, you know, we're going to look at very seriously. And we have a very comprehensive concussion protocol already in place, you know, following the Hockey Canada concussion policies and our partnership through Head Check Health, which provides every player in our league with an initial baseline test. And it provides all of our training staffs with the tools and resources to help identify, manage, and really protect against concussions as much as we can. And with Pan Am, this is just another level of support where, you know, if maybe it's a rural team or if it's a city team, they have another option where they can go to concussion specialists and really, you know, have that support and have that resource available to them. So concussions are obviously part of the game of hockey. We try to, you know, you hope they don't happen, but there's no way of avoiding them 100%. So we want to make sure that all of our players have the absolute best care and best resources available to them while they play in the MJHL.
You know, Kevin, we hear the names of guys who went from players who went from the MJHL, played in the NHL, and that, you know, obviously those are always victories. The Reggie Leach, Ted Nolans, Theo Fleury's, those kind of guys. You hear those names, they elicit strong reactions. But it's not just a league for developing hockey players. I mean, you guys did a story on Lindsay Gullett, who I got to know because I covered the Manitoba Moose, and I would see Lindsay in the booth, but he was with the Verdun Oil Kings, got his start there, and then moved to the Moose. Now he's with the Oilers, is kind of leading the show with the Edmonton Oilers. So, and you've got a guy like Josh Green, obviously a former NHLer. Now he's a head coach with the Winnipeg Freeze. So what has the league meant from a developmental point of view, not just for the players, but also for guys in and around the hockey world?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, we're a development league, and that's not just for players. Obviously, that's a major, major focus. But we want quality individuals that are looking to advance their careers in all levels, if that's coaching staffs, if that's marketing managers, you know, training staffs, league officials, on- and off-ice officials. You know, it provides them with the opportunity to gain valuable experience working at a high level as they progress through their careers. And really, any advancement of any kind of you know, a staff member or a player or anyone involved with the MJHL community is a huge bonus. And it's something that we try to promote heavily, you know, on our media platforms. And really, we're just as proud of a moment like that as we are as a player advancing. So it's pretty special to see. And I think we're seeing more and more quality people coming into the league that that are using the league as a stepping stone to higher levels of sport.
Kevin Surrett is the commissioner of the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. Kevin, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight this morning. Thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck for what will undoubtedly be a season like no other with all the challenges that the COVID pandemic is going to present. Best of luck to you.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Have a great day, and take care.
Thanks, Kevin. Take care. When we come back, one final segment, we'll take a look at the Odd Shark inbox, see some of your responses to the questions we've asked throughout the course of the last 2 hours and 45 minutes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Aside from reiterating that the NHL hopes to drop the puck on January 1st, there really were no assurances because the league is not in a position to give assurances at this point. With the rising COVID cases around the world, not just in North America, the way it's affecting other sports and other hockey leagues in Europe, there's just so many unknowns right now for the NHL, and that was really the main message.
Pierre LeBrun giving his analysis of yesterday's NHL general manager's Zoom call. I'm not sure if they use Zoom or if they use Skype or if they use Teams.
What about Cisco WebEx?
Maybe they're a Cisco WebEx sort of group. I'm really not 100% sure. It doesn't really matter, I got to tell you. But
what about
anyways,
MSN Messenger?
Well, can you make video calls on MSN Messenger? I'm really not sure.
What about
ICQ?
That. Anybody remember ICQ?
Yes.
IRC?
I don't remember IRC.
Is anybody
IRC
on Microsoft
Oh, IRC
DOS
was
shell
what, like,
anymore?
Internet Relay Chat? Is that what IRC was?
Like, I don't remember.
Okay, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. Anyways, the NHL general managers met, and they resolved more or less nothing and had more or less no answers for what the next season is going to look like. But take your time, guys. No rush. It's only the 24th of October.
Well, as long as it doesn't have 82 games.
Well, the best part is yesterday
I saw the NHL tweet. I was like, can they just give it up? Like, we're fine. Everybody is fine. I get that you need to increase revenue.
Yeah.
You know how many injured players you're going to have if you try and condense into an 82-game schedule before July?
I think they're going to play 82 games in 80 days.
I think based
double headers.
I think based on the TV numbers alone, you know that summer hockey is not a thing.
Yeah.
So the reality is you can't have that happen again.
I love that they're still banging the drum.
Guys, if you read Michael, I don't know if you read Michael Russo's piece in The Athletic today, but I mean, he talked to Bill Daly and he quotes Bill Daly. And I mean, realistically, you know, it's going to be a 48 to 60
like a lockout half season.
I mean, I think it's going to be closer to 48.
I think they'll be lucky to get 48 at this point in time almost, but it's crazy that the lead story on NHL.com, and I get it that it's, you know, it's not journalism, it's PR, talking about how, oh, there's still hope for an 82 game season. No, there isn't.
There's a 0% chance the NHL will have an 82-game season.
Under what world are they imagining an 82-game season? In any event, that's a separate issue altogether. We did promise to open up the Odds Shark inbox. Let's check that out, presented by Odds Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddsshark.net. A lot of talk throughout the course of the, particularly in the first hour, about Patrick Laine. You know, the question of the day was, what number of years, what amount of money would you be comfortable the Jets re-signing Patrick Laine or signing him to a contract extension at? A lot of people giving 8 years and $10 million. We have a texter who says, sign Laine all day. My goodness, what's wrong with people? He fell in our lap. Sign, sign, sign. We'll never lure a guy like that via free agency. We got lucky getting him. Now we keep him. These trigger guys are rare and are game changers. Teams need to win cups. Think about teams who trade their future at trade deadlines for guys like this. Why? Because they know they'll need him. They'll need them to win. So that texter.
Amen.
Send your text to 129090. They're saying sign Laine every day and twice on Sundays. Somebody else chiming in saying great discussion. So thanks for that, Mom. Appreciate that. And a lot of stuff coming in via Twitter as well. More comments, people saying, you know, give Laine $10 million a year for 8 years. Max out the contract for Patrick Laine. You know, somebody saying that we're overthinking the expansion draft. No need to let that factor into the Jets' desire for a left side defenseman. Our buddy Rowdy listening in, I assume he's out in the Netherlands, says sign Laine for $9 million plus if he signs for 4 to 6 years. Give him $10 million plus if it's 7 or 8 years. If term cannot be agreed upon, then something around $8 million for Laine. So a lot of comments coming in via Twitter, coming in via text. And I really can't do this description justice, but Mr. Diction, who is a Twitter personality or somebody that tweets at us on Twitter, has sent us a nice Jewish guy's calendar for the year 2021. Initially, I thought the cover model on this was Mad Libel.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, it's Libel.
Yeah, it's not. But the headline is, you can bring them home to mom, 100% Bubby approved. And he has Photoshopped Dave into the list of the nice Jewish guy's calendar for 2021.
I am 100% Bubby approved.
I'm really not sure what that means about Ezzy and I, why we're not included on
I am there.
No, you're not.
It's just your name.
It's just somebody that says Ezra.
Hey. My name's there. I'm in there. I made the calendar, boys. Yeah. Drew, you're just jealous that you didn't make the calendar.
Clearly, I am jealous about that.
Thank you, Mr. Diction.
Thank you for Mr. Diction for providing us with this piece of levity on Saturday
that
morning.
That really does look like libel.
we'll tweet it out or follow Mr. Diction. Mr. Pastry 2 on Twitter if you want to see what we're talking about. Because I thought it was libel at
first.
Hold on,
is it Mr. Pastry or Mr. Diction?
Well, his handle is Mr. Pastry 2. But I guess,
like, if you want to at tweet him, he's at Mr. Pastry 2, but his title is Mr. Diction.
I feel like we might have to do a 3-hour show on who Mr. Pastry really is. Like, I want to know what kind of pastry does
wait,
he like.
Wait,
does he like croissants? Does he like donuts?
Wait, Ezzy, are you talking about Mr. Pastry 2 or Mr. Pastry?
Because
maybe you want to figure out why he had to.
No, Mr. Pastry 2.
This leads seamlessly into our conversation about how Ezzy had, was it 4 or 5 tweets in a row on Thursday night
about pie?
Your preferred pies?
Well, listen, I mean, I was really craving a pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
And, I decided to just share with the world my thoughts on pies. And I one of the things to me that really, in addition, I was hungry, let's be honest. It really comes down to that. I just really wanted a pumpkin pie, and then I just started thinking of other pies, like pecan pie and apple pie, and, you know, I just really wanted to get a discussion going. And that's what I like to do, Drew. I like to make other people hungry.
And did you end up getting any pie?
No, I didn't, but I can guarantee you that I will be having pumpkin pie. It's the time of year with Halloween coming up. I walked by the pie aisle the other day, and I wanted to pick one up, but I'm trying to slim down. So
it was like The Simpsons. It was like
thanks for your support, by the way.
It was like The Simpsons, where it's like, did you have all you can eat? No. Yeah. Yes. Then where did you go? We went to an all you can eat diner.
Yeah. Then they went fishing after Homer finished the all you can eat after fishing. All right, the all you can eat seafood. That's it. We can't follow up on that. We're done. Thanks for everybody for listening to this edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the show, in case you missed any of the interviews, they'll be available for download on illegalcurve.com. It's available on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor back at the station doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.